Hey, listen up.
Yeah, we here and we locked in. Let's keep it going all the way to the top 10. We fear the turtle, so it's no other option. Fred and Ryan, just watch them. Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
Let's take it to the max.
It's the Shell and Tell.
They come with all the facts.
It's the Shell and Tell.
What's up, Turf fans? Welcome back to yet another edition of the Shell and Tell podcast. It's Monday, November 14th, and we got a lot to digest on this week's show, man. I think we've all kind of been through a roller coaster of emotions these last 2 weeks. I mean, everything from anger to sadness to even apathy. I mean, we get into the feelings of this season that we hope to avoid, but yet here we are.
Yeah, we took a break trying to think we might have nicer things to say, but that's not how it went. So at some point after we ease our own anger and sadness for what's going on, we'll also try to ease the angry mob out there trying to look at the hopeful things to hang on to on both this season and the football program moving forward.
Yep. And as we after we wrap up, you know, digesting the latest around the football program and kind of closing out the regular season, we'll shift gears over to the basketball, where the Willett era is officially kicked off with the first two games in the books and with game number 3 set for Tuesday night.
All right, guys, like I said, we took a hiatus last week. I'll be honest with you.
Impromptu.
Yeah, I'll be perfectly upfront with you. I didn't even watch the game. I had some family commitments going on, and after I read about it, after I heard Ryan cry to me about it, I was like, you know what? I don't even know if I want to watch this game. It was a rough week, and followed by yet another rough week. Tough time to be a Terp fan right now. But here we are, 6-4 overall, 3-4 in the Big Ten. After two horrendous, embarrassing, just disaster showings at Wisconsin and Penn State.
Yeah, I can't really remember 2 weeks that hurt this bad. It's just, yeah. There's been very little, if not nothing, positive to hold on to as far as these two games. Of course, there's still some bright spots in this season, but that was bad, bad.
Yeah, and I just thought Saturday just went south so quickly, and I kind of felt it on the first two drives both ways, and you just kind of felt a difference in energy, difference in confidence, and yeah, like you guys said, I think just kind of after what we saw against Wisconsin, it was the exact kind of start that you did not want to have, especially on the road against Penn State team that's fired up to have to welcome Maryland back into Happy Valley for the first time since 2020, the last time that Maryland won against Penn State. So just like you guys said, not a lot that went Maryland's way.
Super disappointing. And I mean, it was two losses that really are very different from each other in the way that the outcome was. I mean, the first loss in Wisconsin to me, and Ryan, I'll let you kind of elaborate on this, that loss fell more on coaching and preparation and game plan, in my opinion, not the players.
Yeah, I mean, I truly do. I looked at this whole thing. It's just like every game has been a different way of feeling. But that game in particular was, I don't know who the better team was, but maybe I was just making excuses. I was talking to my wife about this, that like the Maryland season is like, as you see, the name of the show, Stages of Grieving. Like, it really is that this year we went through all of it. We started with the Purdue game. We end up getting a loss, and we're like in full denial, like, oh, we were better than them, and it was the ref's fault, and this and that should have gone better, and it's fine. We'll get back on track. Then you go to Indiana, and I posted right on the show, it was how angry that game made me. It just made me so furious the way we were playing, because it was that close. We were dropping balls. We were doing dumb things that could have made it better. You go into Wisconsin, and it was projection. It was the coach's fault. Like you said, everything about it, the game plan was like sunshine and roses. Like, we were going to go West Coast offense and throw the ball in 50 miles an hour in rain. Yeah. And call bad timeouts when the field goal team is running onto the field for a last second kick before the end of the half. I don't see a single good coaching center, not to mention the very first play where your quarterback doesn't have his visor off of his helmet when it's been raining all morning and you knew it was going to rain all week. There was not one play that coaching made a good decision in that entire game.
Yeah. So I think the only caveat I'll throw is the visor issue. I believe that Loxie said, I think it was just the way that it was raining. I think it was raining heavier during
Stinging
pregame warmups.
Rain,
so the Pies was helping.
Rain was coming in from the side.
So, something like that. But so I think that was kind of the only caveat. But like you guys said, you know, it was just kind of a lot of coaching. And like you guys said, I mean, I think there were some, you know, second half adjustments that were made by the defense the last 2 weeks.
This is the fan thing. I was probably wrong, but in the way it felt in the moment, the projection game, like I said, in the stages of grieving, I just was maybe just defending the team itself in the fact that we didn't have a fair chance because we were trying to throw the ball in 50 mile an hour winds and not bringing in extra blockers and had three wide receivers on the field when no one was even guarding them because you can't get it to them anyway, instead of playing in a cloud of mud, not a cloud of dust because it was so wet, and trying to get 3.3 yards a carry with bigger body dudes just walking. Like, that's the only way you can win that game. And so maybe we lose even if we make all the right decisions after seeing what we played against with Penn State, because I don't think that coaching was a large part of the issue. I do think clearly there is some reason that we are defending fourth and ones very poorly, since that continues to happen both last season and this season, where it ends up being not a fourth down conversion, but a fourth down touchdown nearly constantly.
So that's where my opinion varies. So like I said, I agree that, yes, it was game plan. Leah should have never been in quarterback against Wisconsin, especially after that first drive.
At all.
They should the game plan that day should have never been throwing the ball. I'm sorry, that hurricane type wind does not pop up out of nowhere. It was in the forecast for a while, so you knew this was coming. So your game plan should have been ground and pound, and he's hurt. Exactly. Ground and pound. Well, who gives you the best option to ground and pound? We found out that that's Billy the Kid's strength, right? And that's what he did the week prior, 2 weeks prior. Why not go out there and run the ball down their throats? Like you said, take the 3.3 yards.
Get 100%.
Exactly. I'm not saying we would have won the game, but it would have given us the best chance to win the game. There was no way in hell with that game plan and that approach that they had against Wisconsin, we were going to win that game, regardless of who was out there. No.
There was no fullback. There was no Austin Fontaine on offense. There were far too many wide receivers. I don't understand any of it.
Right.
Yeah. The Austin Fontaine experiment, I was kind of surprised, hasn't been as prevalent the last couple of weeks. But I know Billy Edwards.
If you're not seeing it there, you're never seeing it.
That's fair. And after the Northwestern game, Billy Edwards didn't practice the week of the bye week. And then leading up to Wisconsin, he was battling back from a high ankle sprain.
Oh, everybody's hurt.
Yeah. So Loxie actually said he was emergency third quarterback. So, but I mean, wow. Number two would have been
the first snap of Wisconsin.
Yeah,
the emergency third quarterback was needed for the first snap of the game because we're so ill prepared.
Yeah, I think Eric Najarian. Yeah, he could have been he probably would number two, but that might probably factored into the decision to kind of keep Talia and keep that leash pretty long, as we saw.
And then the other side of it, again, this Penn State loss. I don't think it was so much game plan. In this game, I think it was Leah shit the bed. Leah shit the bed again when the brights were shining. Were the brightest, in my opinion. His stats were awful. He looked scared while he was out there. Immediately when he would get the ball in the pocket, he was watching his line break down in front of him instead of looking down the field and going through his progressions. And he was trying to find an out immediately. Like, it wasn't like he's looking, there's no progression, there's no nothing there, and now I need to find a hole. He was playing scared from the start.
He needed to be a little scared because that line looked like wet paper bags out there. I don't understand how bad that was. But the difference is, you take the ball, you count to three, and you throw it to someone or throw it away. You don't stand there and look at your line, because what good is that? That just means you're going to get sacked later. It's not preventing. It's not helping anything. Like, if we had like 30 more incomplete passes in that game and less sacks and him getting 1 yard runs because he's like scared, that would felt much better in those situations.
Yeah. I mean, Jalen Duncan, I mean, DJ Glaze, you know, he had a couple of bad plays as well, but Jalen Duncan did not have a good game at all. And I think, I mean, the offensive line, I mean, we saw it a week ago against Wisconsin, Northwestern, you know, just some issues with the center and, you know, getting the snaps down and whatnot. We saw a little bit of that again this week, but so I do think Penn State, you know, a couple of their blitzes, they kind of got creative and they kind of loaded up on Deary, which is, you know, frankly what every team would do. They're going to always try and load up on the weak spot or the most inexperienced guy. And obviously, especially at center, to have a freshman, true freshman, making his third career start against a Penn State front seven that was without Curtis Jacobs. But I thought they did a really good job kind of getting in there. And I kind of look back at to Loxley, you know, this offseason when he said, you know, when he talked about Leah taking that next step, and it's all about the emotional maturity. I think you kind of saw that take a step back, and I felt like I saw it at the end of the second series after they went three and out, deep in their own territory, and it just looked, he just looked kind of rattled.
No. Broken.
Yeah.
And he looked like Josh Jackson. He looked like the what we've said, where it was like, we don't know what's wrong, but his eyes look like hollow. There's no one there anymore.
Yeah. And that was kind of concerning. And that was the first time in the game where I thought, okay, like maybe because I really hadn't, even with Wisconsin, you know, I frankly chalked it up a lot more to weather and just not being able to execute properly. But I attributed it to more of an anomaly. But I thought this was the game that first, like, oh shit moment, or that letdown moment. And I thought that was kind of the most disappointing. Again, to have that be against Penn State is just, you know, adds insult to injury there.
And I almost can't blame the kid. I mean, he got hurt the same week he watched his brother have one of the most traumatic injuries in football history, like to watch that image. And so, like, if he has something going on between his ears, cool. But, like, we need to get that figured out. Like, he needs to be at a sports psychiatrist every day of the week until next week. Like, I don't know, but it's not the same player. And the long leash you mentioned, yes, maybe it was needed because Billy Edwards was hurt in that game. But the long leash goes back to the day Loxley got here. We talked about Josh Jackson already. That should have been taken from him a long time beforehand. Look at the Michigan game, even, where we watched the fight between Mike Loxley and Leah yelling on the sidelines, which in hindsight clearly is, if you're not good enough to play, tell me. Like, I don't want to be the one telling you to sit down. And clearly was the issue in that, because finally he was put on this bench, and that comes out to be when he originally hurt this knee. The leash is so long. Great and terrible at the same time.
But I agree with that the leash shouldn't be as long, but what is your alternative, right? So your alternative is putting in Billy Edwards, right? Or going with an Eric Najarian who's gotten very minimal time. Like, it's not like we have that security blanket like we had last year at backup quarterback, a guy that could come in and compete both with his legs and with his arms. We have not seen Billy do anything through the air in the sample size that he's had at all. It's literally all been with his legs. And I'm sorry, you're not going to beat Wisconsin just with your legs. You're not going to beat Penn State just with your legs. So you got to let him play through it, but I get so frustrated because you know the talent is there. He's got the arm. He's got the ability to read a defense. It's just like I said, it's like when the pressure is at its highest and when the brights are its brightest, that's when he struggles the most. And it's been historically since he's been here. This isn't new.
But Fred, if we can't win without him, and we can't win with him, you're in a lose-lose situation. At some point, they should have punted. And maybe they should have looked themselves in the eye about Wisconsin and realized, with the way this weather's going and the way Leah is acting, we can't win. So Leah needs these 3 weeks off to get actually healthy and try to win at the end of the season. And I don't think anyone's been given the ability to get healthy. It goes back to even to Ruben's high ankle sprain, where he came in and played like red zones that one game, and then he missed another 2 weeks afterwards. Like, we just haven't seen these guys have the ability to get healthy, and I think that gave you a window. It's hindsight.
It's hindsight. 100%.
I know, but like, I also didn't get to see what he was like beforehand to make that judgment call. But if he's 60-70% Leah, which is about what I'm guessing at this point, you're not going to win with that. So let's just give up and lose this game and hope he's better next week.
Yeah, but part of it is also, you know, just this time of year, you know, it just being November. I mean, look at Penn State, their offensive line, you know, they were out. Fashanu, Landon Tengwall, he missed the season. He's going to miss the season. Obviously, Curtis Jacobs, Joey Porter, all those guys, you know, they missed. So, yeah, you know, again, you just kind of get to this point this season. And a lot of these guys are hurt. And I do agree that it is pretty evident, you know, kind of what Leah looks like pre versus post injury. But I think it kind of goes more so back to just kind of the scheme. Like it seemed like even in the Penn State game, I think it was on the third drive, like they started to try and give Leah easier reads, you know, just try and build up momentum. But at that point, you know, Penn State, they weren't really respecting the vertical offense much. So a lot of the, you know, they were just stacking the box and putting a lot of pressure, had a guy in the flats each time. So Merrill really wasn't able to get many explosive plays. And I think that kind of played a part in it. And it even felt like, you know, Maryland, they had that one drive that they were inside, I believe, ended at the Penn State 28-yard line. And again, you know, they're able to kind of build some momentum. But once that drive ended, it was kind of back to square one. Maryland really just wasn't able to get anything going. So I think that, you know, I posted this after the game. I think this is kind of, we've seen the best out of Leah and we've seen the worst out of Leah. Like I, at this point, I think this is kind of
who you get,
who he is.
Yep.
Yeah. And I think that's fair. And, you know, I still think that, you know, I get a lot of messages, a lot of tweets and people, you know, talking about Talia as if, you know, he can't make a pass. Honestly, I mean, as I read some of these messages and I'm just like, you guys are completely underselling him. I do think the long leash again is kind of attributed to one, Loxley just sticking with his guy, and two, part of the mental confidence. So I don't know. I wonder now if, you know, Billy Edwards was healthy, how much Merrill would kind of think of, you know, packages with Billy Edwards on the field, especially going up and against Ohio State team that they can score the ball 90 seconds or less if they wanted to. So I wonder, you know, if Merrill just wants to
foreshadow to the end of the show. I'm not really excited about next week.
Yeah, exactly. But so I just kind of think, you know, as a whole, you know, Talia, you know, like I said, I think this is kind of who he is at this point.
It's just, it's really disappointing. I mean, up until this point, you know, again, the team was 6-2, and the two losses that we had, one's on the road in the Big House at Michigan, you lose by one score. You know, the other is Purdue, we talked about earlier. You know, you could say refs gave that game to him, whatever you want to say. We lost that by one score. You know, every one of these games were winnable. We had potential win of 8 games in the first 8 games of the year.
Yeah.
So my hope was if we were going to have this kind of a loss, it was going to be one, and it was going to be to the expected team, Ohio which is State, next week is Ohio State. So to come off a loss like that to Wisconsin again, I blame that more on coaches than I do on the players in that game. And then just to have the complete shit of the bed against Penn State, it's disheartening, because this is just the typical MO for Maryland football and what it's been for quite some time, is they just can't beat the big teams and the blue bloods in the Big Ten.
Yeah, and we've lost one of our goals,
or stay like with them.
Yeah, our goals for the successful season this year were twofold, and I mean, depending on the number, but my number was 8, even including the bowl game, which we can still get to. We can still beat Rutgers and we can still win the bowl game, so that's still obtainable. But the other one was to eliminate these complete blowout embarrassing losses to the blue bloods. And honestly, Wisconsin is not a blue blood, and it still was almost that embarrassing. The garbage time touchdown saves the box score watchers from making it look like that, but in reality it was that bad, and Penn State stayed that bad. The box score watchers are gonna be able to point that. There's gonna be another one on the list, these people that want to list scores back to 1902 about how bad this, you know, uneven rivalry has been, even though there have been plenty of close games in the Big Ten era of Maryland. It's just gonna be added to the list of blowouts, and
yeah,
it's terrible.
I think that's right. I think Wisconsin, I mean, and I'm not making an excuse, and I'm not like,
you're allowed to make excuses, Ahmed. Like I said, you can just ask questions and we can be mean. Like, I'll get you're in a bad spot here.
No. I honestly, like, I, you know, I have relationships with a lot of these guys, but even still, you know, I'll speak freely. I mean, I was, you know, was speaking pretty freely with one of them on Sunday. So, you know, I never feel the need to hold back too much, but, I think Wisconsin, you know, you take out a couple, you know, obviously those two long touchdown runs. And you could say this about any game. If you take out the two biggest plays of any game, you know, oh, obviously it's a different game.
Yeah.
But outside of those, it was just an ugly game of football, period. Yep. And I think I think, and someone actually texted me after the game and said, you know what, I wonder how much the coaching staff brushed off the Wisconsin performance due to weather and maybe didn't drill into the, like, the underlying issues maybe going into Penn State. And that's not me to say, you know, I don't think they did their job, because I do. I just think that this game, and I agree with you, Ryan, but this game, the Penn State game, was the more disappointing game in terms of execution. I mean, all these guys know what
it was, the players' fault.
That's what I'm saying. Coaching was one, and players was this one.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, and again, I posted this on the site. There's been no bigger disappointment in my eyes this season than Jalen Duncan. You know, I think
his draft stock is gone. I mean, he was what, a second or third, hoping to come back to be a first, and now he'll be a fifth or seventh.
He was, I think, going into Michigan, or maybe if it wasn't the start of Big Ten play, it was end of non-conference. But
I was saying first if he went out last year, is what I was saying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
He could have been a third-round pick last year, and instead of being first, now he's going to be a day three pick.
And I still think he's, you know, he'll be a day three pick, you know, because you don't find, you know, 6'8" guys that can move like that. And he's, you know, done a good job moving his body. But I partly agree that, you know, it, you know, players are the ones that play, coaches are the one that coach. But I definitely see where Locksley said why he said, you know, it's time that we kind of take a look, starting with me, take a look at everything that we do, personnel, coaching, who's on the field, who isn't, all of that. So this one was the one that just leaves a really bad taste in my mouth.
Well, you're not the only person left with a bad taste in the mouth. It's been everywhere. They're headhunting for everyone.
Yep, including Locks. I mean, that's just...
It's not reality, but it's how the fans feel.
It's not. I mean, do I think Locks needs to go? No, absolutely not. But do I think Locks is the guy moving forward in the future? That's still to be determined. There's a lot of issues with this coaching staff that he heads on. He needs to make the proper decisions and the proper changes, but that also comes from the athletic director and Damon Evans and being able to budget more money for the football team and being able to get higher paid coordinators in here that can produce better. I know Locksley is a big Enos guy because Enos was with him in Alabama and they've got those connections and everything, but I'm sorry, when you have a team loaded with this kind of talent on the offensive side and you put up these kind of performances at zero against Penn State, that who does that fall on? That falls on the coaching and the preparation. And it's just, I'm just frustrated. I don't know. It's
no, I mean, we all agree. I won't put words in anyone's mouth, but I know me and Fred agreed. I think Ahmed agreed that the special teams coordinator last year had to go. And I think it's getting close to everyone agreeing that the offensive coordinator is the one that goes this year. Because I know I am, and it sounds like from that statement, Fred is.
I'm just frustrated.
I don't know how he made it through this week, honestly. This is the kind of loss where you see the sacrificial lamb, even if it fixes nothing, just to show we're doing something. Goodbye.
You wouldn't, because even last year, I mean, when Brian Stewart, when it was kind of, you know, it kind of in flux was to whether he would return or not, there were no public moves made going into the bowl game, going into the last week against Rutgers. But Locksley just handed the keys to Brian Williams and let him call plays for those last two games. So I think that if anything, you know, that would be kind of what we see. And I'm not saying anything about, you know, who'll leave or anything like that, but if we were to see that, you know, you see a guy like Mike Miller, who's consistently on those 35 under 35 lists, done a really good job. And it's been pretty cool, you know, to see Mike Miller, Brian Williams, but those guys that really kind of got their first big opportunity at Maryland and they've kind of rose the ranks. So I think that would be kind of pretty cool to see for Locksley guys.
It's going to be the same thing. He'll give him the keys for the Rutgers game so he can look like a genius and then we can feel great about next season.
Yeah.
I want to ask you that, though, in relation to Mike Miller, because I like Mike Miller a lot. My question would be, though, do you think the right move is to bring an unproven into an offensive coordinator position, or do you think the better move is bringing in somebody experienced and proven?
Where's the money?
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying. It's got to come.
Pay somebody top 10 money to come here at this point.
So I'll kind of push back on, like, the, you know, coaching, because I do think that the coaching this year, like, these coaches are good. Like, you know, a lot of people want to point out the bad. No one wants to talk about Bo Braid and Dante Schrader being first year starters, Wes Neighbors coming from Arkansas State, where he left to be an associate head coach, and he's come here and he is
a lot of good on defense.
My issue isn't defensively at all. My issue is not defense has outperformed our expectations by a long shot.
We've talked every week that we were just wrong. We thought we were scared of the defense and we were ready for the most dominant offensive performance in the history of time, but we maybe didn't have some running backs. Right. We were wrong about literally everything on this team. And it wasn't it was everyone that has ever looked at the Maryland roster. Every ESPN analyst, every Sports Illustrated analyst, every 247, whoever you are, everyone said the wide receivers are great. The offensive line is veteran and the defense is scary. And the running backs are unproven. Well, we were all wrong. Everyone that ever saw a Terrapin roster was wrong across the board.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that's fair. I think I just wanted to make that point because I think, you know, it's very easy, especially in
very happy with Brian Williams
to, you know, bring up and harsh on the bad. But I think, you know, those guys, James Thomas, like we mentioned, special teams, you know, he's drastically improved. And I think getting 100%. A guy like Chad Ryland with a big boot, I think that matters. But yeah, anyways, back to the offense. I think Miller is definitely, he's earned the right. Like if that move is made, like, you know, last year he was getting pretty heavily pursued by Memphis for the offensive coordinator job. And then Duke looked pretty hard at Mike Miller. So what happened was Duke wanted Mike Miller. Maryland kind of said no. Lux made sure that, you know, he stayed here, and that kind of led to the co-offensive coordinator or the passing game coordinator, whatnot, you know, that elevation in his status. And then Zon Burden, he was kind of next guy up, and Lux was like, okay, you know, best of luck at Duke. That's kind of how that all went about. So I think that Miller has earned that right, and I think he's respected inside the program. He's very well liked, being recognized nationally as, you know, one of those next up and comers. So I wouldn't be opposed to it. I think he knows the personnel. He knows the offense. He knows the guys. And back in the spring, you know, he talked about the opportunity to leave and go be an offensive coordinator at Duke outright instead of splitting the title with Enos here. And Miller was like, you know what? I kind of wanted to see this through. And he's right. He came here in 2019 and he saw it through. Brian Williams got a shot at defensive coordinator. And like I said at the beginning of the show, he was a guy that he really got his first big opportunity at Maryland, and he's risen through the ranks. So why doesn't Miller get the shot? So
and Williams again, this is not to be like the Debbie Downer on everything. Right now, I think emotions are high because it's two embarrassing losses, right? But there is a lot of high points. There's a lot of good to take away from this team right now. And Brian Williams is right up there with the cream of the crop because honestly, he wasn't Maryland's first choice in the offseason for defensive coordinator. Let's not forget, right? We had a guy spurn us for, what was it, Miami, right? He went down to Miami.
Yeah. Kevin Steele.
Yeah,
Kevin Steele. Getting torched this year, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah. So for him,
so sorry for your sadness this year.
But for him to be the fallback option and to do the job that he's done speaks volumes of him and what he's been able to do, and also speaks volumes of what these kids have been able to do on the defensive side.
And I think it's what we have to do. I think Mike Miller has to be your next offensive coordinator because it's who we are. We're a developmental program. Like Loxley said, we're not going to go out there and outbid for like the three dudes that are actually wanted that don't have a job right now. So we have to get the guys like Brian Williams that are the up and coming. And again, Lox has got a lot of faults. He calls dumb timeouts. I'm not a fan of things that go on, but he does know talent. We've seen it over and over again. And I think the coaches are included in that. The fact that he gave Brian Williams that run and at defense coordinator before he brought in somebody else, I think he was encouraged to bring in somebody else. He's probably wanted Brian Williams at some point, but the young up and coming people where you hope to build some kind of rapport, some kind of loyalty to Lox, where they're not going to jump at the first one that gives them 100,000 more a year. Like that's where we are. That's how you build this.
And 2 years ago, both Auburn and Miami made a pretty big run at B-Will. So I think, you know, I think if someone asked me, you know, I think B-Will needs to go, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know about that.
Year?
I think, you know, I mean, you know, that like was I said, bad I take. Get all, no, I get all kinds of messages, man. I just have to put a brave face on and, you know, yeah. just deal with it. But
I can't think of a single game at the end of it that I thought Brian Williams needs to go. Sure, in the end of the first quarter where we're getting blown up, cool. But like by the end of the game, he always earns back on my good side.
And I mean, you know, the big thing. I mean, one, and I, you know, pretty much my response was, you know, one, this is his first year as defense coordinator. Two, he's been able to make the second half adjustments, and that's been kind of evident through Big Ten play. And the defense has also drastically picked it up since the SMU game. I think we forget how awful they were the first 3 weeks of the season. I mean, you remember those first two drives against Charlotte? And then three, you know, Brian Williams, what he's able to do recruiting wise. So, I think that, you know, he's definitely good in my book. So we'll see what happens on the offensive side of the ball. But, in terms of, you know, Loxie being on the hot seat, whatnot, that's just not realistic. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, he just got that extension.
Right. He's, in the books till 2026. And he's
probably
right?
getting another extension this year because it's got the automatic wins update for it to extend another year. Like, we're not firing him. We're making the contract longer.
Yeah.
That's what's going to happen.
I need to double check on that. If memory serves correct, it might trigger next year. I'm not.
Oh, okay. I remember it being 7 wins would extend it, but I don't know. I didn't know that first year of it being open.
I'll double check it after after this episode and then post it on the site when I see that. But I mean, again, he does have that clause. This is not a Turgeon 2.0 situation. What I will say is when you look at a coach, you always give them 4 years because at that point they have all their guys. It's their program. Yep. Their culture is instilled. Like this is his guys. I mean, yeah, obviously the extra COVID years has made some guys turn into 7-year college players. Hello, Tyrell Pigrome. But I do get it from the degree of Loxley isn't the guy because this is what we've seen for 4 years now. So that is a valid concern in my eyes. But in terms of firing and all that, that is just throw that away. It's just not happening. It's not even time to talk about that, fire up that train. So I think those are two separate conversations right now.
Yeah, it's completely unrealistic. The finances aren't real. It's not where anyone's at right now. It's not going to happen. So it's just the next step of the crazy fan of what we need to talk about. But yeah, doesn't mean we if we're wrong that this team could be stuck in limbo for 4 more years, maybe. But that's just the risk you take when you sign this contract. Do it. And the upside of Locks has always been higher than anyone else you can hire in this job. And that's what will keep him around possibly longer than anyone thinks he should, because he's the only coach that if he starts winning 11 games a year, will stay here. The only one. There's nobody else in the world that's going to stay here if they're winning 10, 11 games.
That's a big if. We had to crawl before we walk. But
I'm just saying, like, and that number's high, too. So
no,
like,
I know.
There's no coach that would stay here winning 9 games, most likely.
I mean,
conference changes, we're not winning 11 games. It's just point blank. It's not going to happen.
There's some exaggeration there, but I'm just saying. He's the only one that truly can say it's his dream job and mean it.
Yeah.
The only one.
I think that is 100% valid. And one thing that we kind of overlook with Loxley is that, you know, like I said, if you know, he's here for a couple more years, we forget that before that, you know, the sense region, it's kind of just been, you know, coaching turnover and a lot of instability. And there's a lot more stability. I mean, yeah, obviously you have the position coaches that are changing, but, you know, what school isn't doing that? I think there was only one Power 5 school that returned their entire coaching staff from last year. What I will add about Loxley is that and I know Maryland fans will hate that I say this, but it's very realistic now that they just beat Rutgers and then they possibly win their bowl game, which would give them 8 wins, and it would be the first 8-win season since 2010. So what I ask is, if you are so adamant about Loxley being fired, who is out there that you know is going to be an upgrade that will say yes and frankly can capitalize on the in-game and recruiting?
And you can pay him the 9th best salary in the Big Ten.
Yeah. I think, and I've kind of said this before, I think, you know, possibly the answer, like I said, I don't think we're there yet, but I do think the possible answer might be Marshall's head coach, Charles Huff. That kind of seems like it. But again, I just don't think we're there yet. And, you know, do you know that if Charles Huff it would be the next guy, do you know that that would be an upgrade?
No.
And that it would
nobody does.
No.
That's the point. Nobody does.
That's kind of my counter argument.
The biggest area I think that I want to see improvement from Locks in is the area that I thought was a strength coming in here, and it's the recruiting side, right? I think right now, what are we at, the 40 something ranked class coming in next year? Is that what we are, somewhere in that, Ahmed?
Yeah, it might sit a little bit lower, unfortunately, right now, but we'll see where it ends.
That's supposed to have been his strength, you know. And again, being a guy who's in the backyard like that, that's an area that I need to see an improvement on.
We'll see where it ends.
I also have a question for the last two weeks about this, but we'll see.
There's a lot brewing.
All right. I have a question about the past. Then we don't want to talk about the future. We got a lot brewing. Ahmed's got some secrets he ain't going to tell us. But this is a sad question that I haven't wanted to ask here on air. But, you know, we're all depressed now, so I'm going to ask. I haven't talked to Fred about this. I haven't done anything. So we had very few, you know, wins in the off season of bringing people in. Obviously, our kicker was a pretty good one. The other one of the higher rated transfers was a defensive lineman out of Liberty, and it sounded at that moment to me that it was a defensive lineman leaving a smaller college for a bigger college because he was better than his conference. But now Mr. Liberty has been in the top 25 for multiple weeks this year, and the Terps can't win a game versus anyone. So did he transfer because he wasn't good enough to be on Liberty to Maryland? Because if he did, I'm real sad.
No, he's good enough. I mean, he's playing a lot. Next year, Maryland.
I haven't watched a single Liberty game, so it was out of nowhere. But I just keep seeing Liberty in the top 25 and going, maybe we were his I need more playing time school.
No, he's a good player. He's also long time relationship with Gary Wortham. He's a recruiting analyst at Maryland, Northern Virginia Tides and whatnot. But
makes me feel a little bit better. I just started, you know, because I have all these negative thoughts about Maryland, it started creeping in my head.
Maryland will probably have to replace their entire starting defensive line next year. Yep. So Chibuzi will kind of step in. From what I heard, he was kind of initially locking down nose tackle before he moved to defensive tackle. So I think he'll kind of be that versatile piece inside. But yeah, him and Tommy A will probably be starters for now next year. Well, I think it's really premature because I think there's a lot that's going to be up in the air, really both sides of the ball in terms of portal and whatnot. But if I'm a betting man, I'd bet that Chibuzi's a starter next year.
And then who was the kid that also transferred in from Florida State? I can't think of his name right now.
Quayshon Fuller.
Yeah, Fuller. Yeah. Okay. He's played a little bit too. He's looked decent at times.
Yeah. He was a guy that I kind of expected to play maybe a bigger role and kind of step in, but I think Austin Fontaine, he was able to kind of really step up and kind of reclaim that defensive end job, and it kind of started through the early stages of fall camp. He's another guy you kind of need depth. I mean, we saw Riyad Wilmot, he's another guy that's playing DN outside linebacker a little bit.
Right.
So you just kind of need that, but, they are going to need some guys off the edge next season. That is priority number one, and it ain't close.
Well, we also talked about, you know, we've been wrong about everything this year. One of the biggest things we said was this was like the year. We have to do it now or we're not doing it next year because we lose all this production. Well, part of that thought process involved the fact that we were rating these senior linemen and these senior wide receivers and Rack as successful players, and they have been mediocre players. And then we got lots of other younger players that have produced. So I do want to remind people in this moment that the cabinet might not be quite as bare as we thought. And again, this is just me. I'm the Terp optimist. I'm looking forward. But here's the list of people that, yes, they can leave. It's the transfer portal, you know, era. But they're not going to the NFL. They don't have 3 years out of high school. Your entire running back room, Hemby, Littleton, Ramon Brown, all there. The fullback, Joseph Burns, who it was super exciting the first couple weeks, and Locksley apparently has lost him. He doesn't know where he is. He's locked in a room somewhere. Somebody should find him. we have CJ Dupree, who made one of the biggest leaps a player has ever made.
100%.
CJ was thought of as a complete liability at the beginning of the season on the catching side of things, and has been unbelievable.
I wouldn't say a liability, but he was definitely primarily blocking first, right, and he's Ryan definitely turned more into receiving.
Possibly a liability, and kind of, and there were lots of people, like Ahmed said, that called him a glorified tackle coming in to the Terps. He is a legit tight end, and we playing on Sundays, but he's not allowed to this year. So he's either going to go get paid in the portal, or he's going to stay here. And I like the fact Under Armour already has him on a commercial to give us a shot of one more year with CJ Dupree.
Yeah.
The whole defense, like Ahmed said, Brian Williams guys, how many producers on defense can't leave? Oh, like all of them. Freshman Barham, Wheatland, who was a surprise to everyone but Ahmed. He was the only one on board. And Gavin Gibson, who's been, you know, a very productive player. Dante Trader. These guys are freshmen or sophomores that can't go anywhere.
Well, they can go somewhere. Or they go
They're not leaving the NFL. And all of our things were the guys are running out of eligibility. They're going to the NFL. That was what we were saying was going to steal it. We have our whole wide receiver room probably is still going to leave, even though Rack's probably making a bad decision because he's not going to get drafted high because he hasn't shown anything. But we've shown a whole new wide receiver room out there. You've already got Ty Felton, Octavian Smith, and Knotts that when they've given opportunities have looked really good, especially just topside athleticism. I don't think we're anywhere near as empty as we thought we were. The lines, sure, we need some help, but we still have dudes there. Andre Roy, Colton Deary, both monsters of men that look better than any freshman we've brought in a long, long time. We're not as bad as we thought we were. We were wrong about that, too.
Yeah, but you're still relying on a lot of guys that haven't played a ton so far. Yeah. So I think you're
the only one that hasn't played a ton in that list is Andre Roy. Everybody else has played, right? I mean,
Shalik Knotts barely played any.
Yeah, I mean, like Shalik Knotts, like one game he had, I think like four targets, and three of them were just like
the wide receivers might be a bit of a stretch. Okay, yeah, Ryan's a homer.
I think kind of going into the season, there was a chance that you kind of lose all three. If you got one of the corners back, that would have been a boost. But there's a pretty good possibility that you see both Tarheeb Still and Deontay Banks back next year. Wouldn't be surprised if Banks is the one that's kind of, you know, flirting and he ends up going for the draft. But, I think that would kind of also be another boost for this.
You think Banks has NFL draft stock, really?
I think that I wouldn't be surprised if he weighs it more, because I also think that'd be a guy that he goes to the combine and he crushes it. I also think he's been the guy that a lot of those PI calls, not a lot, but some of those PI calls were not true PIs. So,
fair,
but yeah, I mean, he'll go to the combine and he will kill it. I remember when he committed, I mean, I think he was like a zero star for a while, and it was like every single time he went up, they were just like, dude, he's better than I expected. He's better than I expected. And just kind of continued at Maryland. So I think that, you know, the tape has kind of definitely been up and down this year. He's made a couple of nice plays. But again, we'll kind of see.
You're talking about dudes that could go and probably won't. I mean, on that list, you got to put Corey Dyches on that list. He's not going to be a tight end at this moment on the NFL, but he could be if he comes back.
He's too small for an NFL tight end right now. He'd have to put on quite a bit of weight.
Yeah, so he's gonna most likely be back. And then Hippolyte hasn't had any chance to do anything on tape, so you're probably getting Hippolyte back that you thought would be gone. I mean, and Fred's been saying the whole time maybe Talia's not going anywhere. I don't know.
I just don't think he does. He doesn't have very high draft stock. The only reason I think a team takes a shot on Leah is because of his family, is because of the name. The last name was Jersey. He hasn't shown anything that he can throw the ball beyond 20 yards with any consistency deep. Not without
Dante Demas pre-knee injury. That's the only time that's ever been consistent, ever.
I think he finished 5 of 17 on passes more than 5 yards downfield against Penn State on Saturday. Those stats weren't too different the week before. So
right.
I agree. I thought kind of going into the season, I thought he'd have some intriguing draft prospects.
I did too.
We'll see. And you know, at the end of the day, and I hate talking about it like this because it kind of,
that's why we didn't have a show last week. We don't want to do this, people, but we can't just wait for you to win to do a show. We'd have 4 weeks off.
Yeah. And I feel like it does come across this way as me, you know, saying like speaking down on him. But there's nothing wrong with being a great college quarterback.
Agreed.
Tim Tebow has made a career of it.
Yeah.
Tim Tebow is one of the most relevant athletes in the history of time, and he was a terrible NFL.
He's one of the greatest college football players ever. Like, not just
not just a Talia. Like, he's one of the greatest college
players.
All right,
well, let Talia come back next year. He already holds every record.
No, I'm 100% on board. What do we have coming in to replace him? I think we've got some good young guys coming in at quarterback, but they're going to need some time to get there. And if you've got Leah for one more year to buy Jabai, and I think Leah's name, even with the struggles he's had this year, still is attractive to other players. If you lose,
sell that knee injury. That knee injury was terrible. He had only half a ligament left.
If you lose all three of your starting wide receivers, like you're talking about, he still does garner some interest from other guys coming in. So if you need to restock the cabinet, you can. I think.
And I'm telling you, I know I'm homerless, but Ty Felton, Octavian Smith, and Knotts are, without anyone else, is still better than most of the wide receivers records we've had since that 2010 8-win season. We haven't had, like,
on paper.
We had one dude.
Yeah, it would still just be so inexperienced. I mean, yeah. I love Ty. I think Octavian's going to be, since he enrolled, I've been so high on him. I think he's going to be a special player. Shalik Nazi was kind of set back with his hand, but I think he's going to be a good player. But again, they'll probably go for like two portal guys.
Agreed.
And
guess what? Rax should just stay and figure out how to catch the ball.
Rax going to take the Diggs approach. He doesn't care if he goes second round or if he goes sixth round. He's just going to get an opportunity. He's going to shine once he gets to the NFL. He's going to crush it at the combine, too.
Yeah. And he's been like, that one's probably been the most obvious.
Yeah, he said it before the Michigan game, and he hasn't caught a ball since.
Yeah, and even when he was a freshman going into high school, it was always 3 years. So
yeah,
I think there's no chance. And I do think that Racky will be interesting because I think for the drops that will hold him back, I think he's kind of improved and shown some really good tape as a blocker
downfield. 100%.
No. So
yeah, blocking gets you in the fifth round. Catchers get you in the first.
Get you the Ravens. I agree. Fourth round.
I agree. I think. I think it'll be interesting. I think there's no chance that he.
And it sucks because I legit thought he was a second round floor. That's where I was every year that he's been there, and it just didn't happen. Apparently, I don't.
Yeah. Well, all right, guys, we got to move on at some point. I know we've kind of hit on Ohio State a little bit here and there, but let's just run through this upcoming matchup, which we all expect to not be the greatest, but we have been here before a few years back in a very similar situation going
didn't
up
belong
against,
in that game either.
Did not belong in that game. It's here. It's at home. But they're coming in 27.5-point favorites right now.
A minus 10,000. That's 10K bet to win $10,100. I don't know if I've ever seen that.
Yeah.
That's insane. Now, they are hedging a little bit because you can't make 10,000 by taking Maryland to win the game. That's only like 3,000. But I put the 10,000 there because it was just so shocking.
Yeah. And like I said a couple weeks ago, man, Ohio State can do it any which way that they want. Now they're reeling a little bit at running back because they had a guy go down. What's his name? I can't think of Henderson. Maybe I can't think of his name. The running back went down with an ankle injury last week, but so they're a little, little depleted at the running back position. But again,
yeah. What did the replacement look like, Fred?
I mean, he looked okay. He looked okay. But
it was first run, he broke three ankles and ran for a 60-yard touchdown. And they called him. He said, "We don't really know what this guy is. He has played a little cornerback. He's played a little linebacker, a little wide receiver for them. So now he's playing running back for him. He was just the like back end athlete Ohio State had in the stables, and he ran like some Deion Sanders trip run on the corner and scores a touchdown. It's OSU.
Yeah.
Who are the key players? All of them." Right. All of them.
Yeah.
This is why we can't win in November, is because their fourth string is better than our second string, maybe some of our first string. So we can't have injuries. We have to be healthy all year, and they have to be down to their second string. That's how we win in November.
Yeah.
I don't, it's so depressing.
Well, we got Rutgers next week, so.
That's true.
It is a 63-point over-under. Take the over. That's all I can tell you on this one. But ESPN said 90% chance for Ohio State to win. That's a window. I can see a window there. That's the best number I can give you on this, is that we're only 10% or 90% to lose. That's
so you're saying there's a chance.
Just saying there's a chance.
Like I said, they could do it any which way if they want to throw it. They're a big play offense too, man. They're going to take their shots down the field. They do it on every possession. You know, we talked about it before. Marvin Harris Jr., one of the best wide receivers in the country right now. 60 catches for almost 1,000 yards, 11 touchdowns on the year. Compare that to Rack at 37 catches for 406 and 3 touchdowns. He was supposed to be our big wide receiver one going into this year. Yeah, it's it doesn't look pretty. It doesn't set up pretty. Yep. You know, all we can hope for is to get out of their own way and to pull off a miracle type win, because that's what they're going to need.
Yeah, I mean they're gaining 500 yards per game to our 395. We're 100 yards less. They're allowing 100 yards less than us with 271 to our 381. All right, they have Heisman-level candidate C.J. Stroud with 34 touchdowns and 4 interceptions, almost 3,000 yards. You already talked about what we saw at Talia the last 2 weeks is falling apart, but before he fell apart, he still only had 14 touchdowns and 6 interceptions. By the way, I don't remember an interception these last two games, so those were all in his good games for 2,000 yards. I just don't see in any world that this works for us, but you know, I didn't predict it the last time we took him to overtime either. So
Anthony McFarland had the game of his life. And that's what it's going to take. It's going to need take a Roman Hemby or a Littleton.
We got a Rack that could have a game of his life. We got Demas who could come return from the dead. There's people out here that could do it. I don't know who it could be. I don't expect it to be a wide receiver because that takes two people to have the game of their life. But who knows? I'm sad to say where I'm at because of these last two games. I'm most excited to watch Marvin Harrison Jr. live in person. Does that make me a terrible person?
No, it could be worse.
Yeah,
that's probably the only thing something I got to look forward to. Right, I hope I'm fucking wrong. I hope I get real excited. It's happened before, but yeah, that's pretty much all I can be like. Yeah, let's go down there to Section 7 to see Marvin Harrison Jr. in person.
Any breaking take for you, Ahmed, on this game, or do you see it kind of being bad?
I mean, I think, you know, Maryland's best chance, you know, you just, like I said, you know, Ohio State can score 90 seconds. You just have to control the clock, which leans on, you know, the running game. But at the end of the day, Ohio State, you know, that defensive line, we saw them against Penn State, and they looked, especially late, they really came alive. So that front seven, you know, they're going to be a really big test for Maryland's offensive line again. If Maryland's offensive line, if they can kind of answer the bell, you know, that would help Maryland kind of control the line of scrimmage, be able to establish some run game and maybe manage some clock a little bit to, you know, just help out a little bit. But again, you know, that's a tall task. I'm not sure that I see a close game going into this weekend.
Let's just hope all our linemen have played in domes their whole life, and the last two games was the first time they saw rain, because that's about what it looked like.
All right, Ryan, well, give me your prediction. How do you see this game shaking out?
Hey, bad. It's going to be real bad. yeah. So I want 64 points for Ohio State, which is about 12 points higher than the average score they're putting up, and 13 points for the Terps. Probably all in garbage time. Maybe we score one touchdown when it's not garbage time. But yeah, this offense has disappeared. Hemby still looks like a man, but you can't do it by yourself, especially when your offensive line is non-existent. CJ Dupree had a couple good plays, but outside of that, I haven't seen anything. I've seen anything the last 2 weeks.
I don't think I'm going to go too far off. I think I got 54-13. I think this Ohio State offense is just extremely explosive. Marvin Harrison Jr., I just think it's kind of wild coming into the season. He wasn't, you know, one of the considered top two receivers, and that's not to say that he wasn't great, but he has sure as hell lived up to it. I think he's going to be a really big test for this Maryland secondary. I think have maybe a guy like Ja'Cory Bennett, Deontay Bakes play off him, and then Dr. Trader over top. You know, it's going to be a handful, but that Ohio State, you know, the running back tandem, their offensive line play, Maryland's allowed over 200 yards on the ground in three consecutive games now, four times this season. And, you know, they've all come against the best running backs in the Big Ten. So I don't know if I see that changing this weekend. So it should be, or I'm expecting it to be another big Buckeye win.
All right. Yep. I mean,
I'm right there with you guys. I'm going to give the defense, I think, a little bit more credit than you two are, and I'll be the one that's wrong. But I'm going to try to do a little reverse jinx here. I mean, you both predicted the Terps to score 13, so I'm going to go with the same thing. You know, unlucky 13s. Maybe that'll somehow reverse the jinx and somehow win this game. I don't know. But I'm going
to
give the defense...
never be more happy to be wrong.
I'm going to give the defense a little bit more credit. You had 64, Ryan. Ahmed, you had 54. I'm going to go 45. I'm going to go 45-13. Ohio State, to your credit, Ahmed, I think even with the lack of depth that Ohio State has right now running the ball, their offensive line is a juggernaut. I think they'll still be able to run the ball at will. It'll probably be another game over 200 yards rushing. So maybe that slows the play down, and that's why I'm saying they're not going to score quite as much. I don't know, but 45-13 is where I see it.
Yeah, I mean, you're closest to Vegas. They with that 63-point over-under and the 27.5, that puts the implied score at 18-45. So you're definitely the closest to Vegas. So it's a good prediction.
Not bad.
All right. Well, let's switch gears. Let's go over to the basketball side of things, the Xfinity Center.
It's happy, kind of?
Yeah, I mean, right now they're 2-0. They're 2-0.
Y'all got what you wanted there. You want a coach fired, and here's your new coach. And what are you doing to show him he's welcome? Nine people went to the first game. All nine people. All you people that said you'd come back as long as you got rid of Turgeon. Where you at? Where you at? Yeah. Anybody? Anybody?
It was pretty disappointing. I mean, I get, you know, Western Carolina and Niagara. Not exactly, you know.
The first game. Come on.
Yeah. I just thought, you know, there'd be some renewed interest. First time in 10 years, 11 years. So, I'll join you on that. I was definitely disappointed with that.
That's why you can't watch message boards and the internet and make coaching decisions.
Yeah.
Because they're all lying.
Wow. That coaching decision needed to be made,
yeah,
regardless of what the messaging boards were saying. So it is what it is. And listen, so far, I'm impressed with Kevin Willard. He's followed through with everything that he said he was going to do so far. You know, this is obviously a small sample size. It's only two games so far, and it's against, you know, inferior competition. But he also set the expectations that it's going to be a while before, you know, we see this team really start to click and get, you know, get going. But what a couple things that we wanted to see from, you know, what did the actual product look like in comparison to what we've seen in the Turgeon years, right? And some of the things that we were barking for and wanted to see, we wanted to see faster pace. We wanted to see more press, wanted to see more trapping. Well, we're seeing that so far, so good, man. And I like it. I mean, listen, there's going to be some bumps along the way and you're going to see, I think for a while, there's really not that one standout scorer. They've got a couple of guys that can score the ball, but I think that's what's going to be. You're going to see the ball passed around. And you're going to have different guys contributing with game to game. I don't think it's going to be one guy dominating.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think it's a surprise that, you know, after game one, I think Julian Reese, I think he, 26 minutes, 7.7 rebounds, if memory serves correctly. And then Willard post game said, you know, we've got to figure out a way to get Juju more touches. And then boom, next game, he has his first double-double of the season. I believe it was a new career 19, high. 12. 12. Yeah. I believe that the 12 rebounds was a new career high for him. But yeah, I think what really kind of gives me some excitement about this team is that, you know, like you said, Ryan, or Fred, they're going to have some, you know, ebbs and flows, especially yeah. early. But when you're going through those, especially offensively, where you're trying to figure out and iron out the, you know, new style, new identity, it's good that you're able to kind of lean on your defense. And I thought, you know, when you watch that first game against Niagara, switching up, you know, between full court press, between half court press, between man zone, and that happened on, I think, the third defensive series of the game. Personally for me, I love watching that. It's actually the opposite of football for me. I love watching defense on basketball, and I thought just the intensity and the way that they've been playing, the substitutions, I thought been good, and you haven't really been seeing a huge drop off on that side. But again, not to take the talent level into consideration, but that is definitely what's gotten the juices flowing so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. You talked about the more athletic Dante Scott. He's been proving it out there with his aerobic ability because he has led the team in minutes in both games, a whopping 35 minutes in the first game and followed up with 28 minutes to follow that, which was still the leading team or player in minutes. He was just a sharp shooter week one, 4 from 5 from deep, and 0 for 3 the next game. Like, it's ways. We're streaky. We talked about this being a high variance type of offense. Well, there's some high variance right there in those two games.
Yeah, I guess the only disappointing thing for me so far, like the first game they did all right as a team shooting the three, and then the second game they kind of regressed as a team shooting the three. Don Carey's off to kind of a rough start shooting the ball. I think he's only made 1 out of 10 shots or somewhere around that mark from three. But he's a guy that I don't think he's streaky. He's just got to find his rhythm. And once he gets going, he is going to be this team's best 3-point shooter. And I like the fact that Willard is still going at him, even though he's struggling a little bit earlier. Like, he is the one guy that he said's got the green light from anywhere at any time on the floor from three. And I think that he will lead us in 3-point percentage. And I think he'll lead us in 3-point shooting come the end of the year, regardless of the struggles early on.
Yeah, we touched on one of the hot takes from us already with the Juju double-double. Just to keep a little running tally there, you already talked about the individual games, but he's just under Fred's prediction at 13 points and 9.5 boards. So he'd, you know, climbing into that average double-double range
bad start. I want to see what he does against the bigger lineups. I mean, look, the team that they just went against that he got the 19 and 12 against was a very small team. So I want to see how he does. How does he body up against some of the bigger competition once we obviously get into Big Ten play? But I like the fact that because he's a confidence guy, it seems like. Once he starts building that confidence, I think he attacks a little bit more. So hopefully we'll see that continue to grow.
I agree. And the other person that's true of is Jameer Young. I mean, he's picked up where he left off in the Power Five or, you know, smaller level competition where he was at. He was doing great. He's playing against similar small level competition right now and doing great. So we're not really going to know what that pickup was until we get into the Big Ten competition and see if he can hack it. But, you know, from what we can see now in this moment, looks like a pretty good pickup and somebody that's going to run this offense well.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I thought first game he did a good job kind of commanding. I thought second game wasn't, you know, really forcing on offense, I wouldn't say, but I thought, you know, was trying to make himself more assertive on the offensive end of the floor. So definitely good to see that. Like I said, you know, first two games, I think they'll kind of get their big chance at an elevated competition level this upcoming weekend. But so far so good. We'll see how they shake out on Tuesday night as well.
And no surprise, it's basketball. So my hot take, not looking so great. Hart it was third in scoring in both games. So being the leading scorer on this team looks pretty unlikely at this point. It's a long season, maybe. Who knows?
Very long season.
It's a very long season. But yeah, you know, shockingly, mine's the farthest off. Ahmed's still looking pretty good with his call. We are not going to be number one in steals, I don't believe, because Rutgers is looking pretty ridiculous, averaging over almost 13 steals per game. But we are seventh at 8, but fourth place only at 9.5, so definitely in striking distance of Ahmed's projection for top four in steals.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you kind of look at how Maryland's playing defensively, and you know, not to say that it's going to be the same levels, but, you know, first two games, you know, Maryland been able to generate double digit turnovers. I believe last game was 17 turnovers. So, you know, are you going to expect to get 15, 17 turnovers in Big Ten play throughout Big Ten play? No, but to be able to kind of show these different looks on defense so quickly and just interchangeably through the flow of the game, I think is pretty impressive this early on. So if they're able to maintain that efficiency defensively, especially with that half court press, maybe against teams that have smaller guards, you know, that can kind of help Jameer Young a little bit. I think that there's a definitely good chance from what we've seen early on that ends up holding true.
Yeah, and the other thing I did want to make note of, we got all three of our incoming recruits on ink on the paper, right? Everything has been signed, official. If you want to go down the name, it was Jamie Kaiser, Jonathan Lemuth, and the other guy.
John Lemuth, and Deshaun Harris-Smith at Paul VI. Yeah, consensus top 20 class. John Lemuth, he's more of a combo guard. I think he kind of fits more at the two. Jamie Kaiser is more of a guy that fits two, maybe more so at the three, can kind of play the two a little bit. He's down at IMG. He was a guy that, you know, probably initially early on was probably going to end up being that second quarterback in Maryland's football's class. And then obviously he shifted over to basketball. Wisconsin offered, a couple other Power Fives offered, blew up through the AU circuit. Maryland was able to get on him through David Cox, and obviously brought him in for an official in June. sweated it out all summer, and then were able to close out his recruitment about 2-3 weeks before he moved down to IMG Academy. So really good guy. And then Paul the Sixth, Deshaun Harris Smith, 4-star guard. He's a guy that really, when he played, when he showed that he can has the point guard capabilities, that was kind of what elevated him to kind of that top target, can't miss category. And Tony Skin was a guy that led with him, really strong connections to just his family, his coaching staff, the assistants at Paul the Sixth. So that was a really good guy. And then obviously Tony Skin again also led for LaMoth out of St. Francis, 3-star guard on three. But like I mentioned, he's more of a combo guard, maybe fits two, but capable at the one. So definitely the future of the backcourt is secured in Willard's class. And then again, like we've talked about before, but just to have all three of those guys, you know, a Nova guy that ends up playing at IMG Academy, a guy from Ball to Six, and then a kid from Baltimore, kind of, you know, those are probably the three big check marks that you want out of your first year head basketball coach after how we've seen local recruiting go for basketball over the last, you know, 5 years or so.
Yeah.
10 years, you could even add.
Right. Yeah. It's exciting.
Yeah.
And one of the other big complaints outside of those recruiting classes in the Turgeon period was the out of conference schedule being weak. And this out of conference schedule is looking even stronger than we thought.
It is.
With new opponents receiving AP votes at this point, we're lined up to play St. Louis, who is now unofficially the 30th, you know, number of votes in the also voting category. We'll put them at 30th. And then the possible next matchup will be Miami, who's now looking at 29th in that same way in the AP poll. Of course, you have UCLA listed at number 8 and Tennessee at 22. So we got some real tests coming up very shortly.
Yeah. And that St. Louis game will be an interesting one. Saturday will be a busy day. Football kicks off. And then St. Louis will be at 1 p.m. So you get some football and basketball in for Maryland fans on Saturday. So, but yeah, I think this weekend will be like we said, you know, first big test for them. So pretty excited to see how they fare.
Yeah, man. Well, we appreciate you guys tuning in. I know this was kind of an all over the place podcast. It was a vent sesh. It was an emotional fest. But no, it needed to happen. It had been 2 weeks of build up for us, and we had a chance to really kind of digest everything that had happened, at least not all three
necessary
of us together.
Evils. When you care about something this much, you also feel the downs.
Yeah, for sure. I felt a little all over the place, but it is what it is, man. I think that's how just Terp fans feel right now. It's just the emotional roller coaster of what this year was, the highs and so far the lows. Let's see how we finish out. But we appreciate you tuning in each and every week. If you're not doing so already, make sure you're following us on all our social media platforms. Make sure you're following us on YouTube at Shell and Tell Pod. You can follow us on Twitter at Shell and Tell Pod. Follow Ryan at Terps B Espert. Follow me at Fred BLBS. Follow Ahmed at Kafir the Turtle. And make sure you're followed and subscribed to Inside Black and Gold. Ryan, sign us off.
Well, the ones that are left, I just want to thank our close friends and family, because I'm assuming that's the only people that are listening at this point, or you're just the greatest Terp fans in the history of time. I'm sure our numbers are about 25% of usual, but you are the only people that matter because you are great Terps fans. Don't worry about anybody else that quit and stop listening. Keep it through. This is what we sign up for. You know, I always said I don't want to be an Alabama fan because it's just every loss sucks and every win is just expected. So this is kind of the fun of being a Terps fan, is there are highs and there are lows. Fun. I would like more highs. I would like 9 wins, 10 wins, but you know, I don't want to win 12 games every year. That seems fucking stressful. That can't be the expectation. But you know, it is what it is. I hold the faith. The future is brighter than you think. The current is not as bad as you think. Like Ahmed said, 8 wins, which is still way on the table, be the best record in 12 years. You're not firing somebody that's doing that. So chill out the people. Get out to the stadium. Support the Terps football. Support the Terps basketball in whatever way you can. We'll get through this just like we always have. Until next time, here's to wishing all is well under the show.